Nightlight has partnered with Fan Roll Dice by Metallic Dice Games to offer an exclusive discount on one of their gorgeous dice sets that we've fallen in love with because of their satisfying weight and, let's just be honest, sparklies. Not to mention their impeccably constructed dice accessories. In one word, velvet. Visit fanrolldice.com, that's FANROLLDICE.com, and use our discount code Nightlight for 10% off any new additions to your dice hoard. A portion of your purchase will come back to us and help support our shows. So go to fanrolldice.com with the discount code Nightlight to get 10% off of any additions to your dice hoard. Hi, I'm Tanya Ransom, creator and executive producer of Nightlight, a horror podcast featuring creepy tales written and performed by Black creatives from all over the world. This week, we're sharing a new story, as well as an old one. Nightlight had our first live show in October, and these are two of the stories that we presented there, and I wanted to share them with you. But before we get to long overdue revenge and a malicious lake, I want to take a moment to say thanks to our newest patrons, Princess and Aubrey. Nightlight will be produced year-round thanks to the Nightlight Legion, and now we'd love to bring you new episodes every single week. Just go to patreon.com/nightlightpod to join the Nightlight Legion and get a shout-out on the podcast, ad-free episodes, and occasional bonus content. And don't forget, Nightlight merch is available, and you can support us by sporting Nightlight-branded gear. Just go to merch.nightlightpod.com to get your t-shirts, hoodies, notebooks, and more. Now sit back, turn out the lights, and enjoy The Dead Circle, followed by Lake Tuesday, both written and narrated by me, Tanya Ransom. What are we going to do? We can't afford to lose these cattle. The man ignored his wife and stared out across his pasture. Smack in the middle was a perfect circle that looked like God had drawn it with a compass and colored it with black earth. 5 dead cattle and a couple of lifeless buzzards were scattered inside. No flies buzzed around the carcasses, no crickets chirped from within. Not a single thing moved inside. Even the stench of death shunned the circle. Vultures flew overhead, but dared not land. They had already seen 2 of their brethren drop to their deaths when they swooped within 10 feet of the corpses. They circled around like the cattle inside were a once-in-a-lifetime chance at the scavenger equivalent of a filet mignon. Joe looked at his wife. Why do you always have to panic? Just like a woman. When she didn't look up at him, he scoffed. Go catch me that stray cat that keeps eating up your garden.
What? Why? She asked.
She finally looked up, her eyes wide with fear. She looked back down and fidgeted with her dress, unable to bear the transparent hate on his face.
Stop asking questions, Mabel. Just go do it. I ain't got time for your nonsense.
All right, Joe.
Mabel skulked away. She knew better than to argue. Joe was the type of man who believed that his wife should love, honor, and most of all, obey.
And bring me a beer,
Joe said, not bothering to turn around.
Yes, Joe.
When Mabel returned with his beer, Joe was sitting in the dirt, staring into the circle. She sat the bottle next to him, careful not to call attention to herself, then turned, quiet as a church mouse, to tiptoe away. The dry, parched grass betrayed her, announcing each of her light steps.
Where's the cat?
Mabel was meek as ever.
I set a trap for him. I'm about to go check it.
God damn it, Mabel, can't you do anything right? I swear I gotta do every goddamn thing myself around here.
Joe stood up and pushed Mabel aside. Not sure if she should follow him or not, she opted to walk behind him at a distance. As they neared the garden, she saw the cat poking around the snare she'd set up. Not wanting Joe to scare the cat away before it got snagged, she quickly walked on the balls of her feet to catch up to him.
He's taking the bait. Don't scare him off, Joe,
she whispered. Joe spun around with a look of fire and revulsion in his eyes.
Shut up, woman. You're gonna scare him off with that Edith Bunker voice of yours.
Mabel flinched more at the look in his eyes than the words he spoke. She'd heard that insult at least 3 times this week. It barely even registered anymore. Joe clenched his fists, but turned away before he hit her. The last thing he needed right now was a crying, hysterical woman. She would get it sooner or later. She always did. Just then, the cat screeched. It was caught in the snare. Joe smiled the devilish smile that Mabel had once found sexy, but now saw it for what it truly was: delight in another living being's suffering. She often wondered if she had just been blind to his evil in those early days, or if he had truly been a good man worn down by a tough life. She chose to believe the latter because she couldn't reconcile being that naive and stupid. Joe's walk had a bit more purpose now. Mabel stood where she was, knowing that whatever it was he had planned, he probably didn't want her to take an uninvited part in it. He walked past the cat and into their little shed. A few moments later, he came out shaking a dusty old potato sack. Puffs of dust floated in the wind toward her. Joe stomped back over to the trap and snatched the cat up by the scruff of its neck, that gleeful smile still on his face. He dropped the cat into the sack and walked back toward the circle with a determined stride. Mabel, more curious than afraid, followed Joe. She again kept her distance because she knew what was good for her. Joe stood a few feet from the edge of the circle.
"Go get me a rake and that spool of string for the weed eater."
Pleased that her decision to follow him was the right one, she smiled and said, "Yes, Joe." Since she had gotten in trouble before for being slow, she ran to the shed like the devil himself was on her heels to grab the things Joe had asked for. She knew he wanted to send the cat into the circle, but refused to allow the notion to take root in her mind. When she returned, Joe was once again fixated on that circle, oblivious to the world around him.
"Here's your stuff, Joe."
"Thank you,"
Joe mumbled. He barely noticed she was there. The circle had captivated him, beckoned him to come closer. Mabel looked at him like he'd grown another set of arms. Joe never thanked anybody for anything. He felt like he was just getting what belonged to him anyway. No point in thanking people for making things right in the world. Mabel stepped a bit closer, afraid to draw his attention, but intent to do exactly that.
"Joe, you're raking string."
He acted as if he hadn't heard a word she had said. Mabel took a few more steps until she was just a foot away from him. She sucked in a deep breath, as if the air itself would give her courage, and tapped him on the shoulder. Feeling a bit more bold, she repeated, "Your rake and string." Joe blinked a couple of times like he was trying to wake from a daydream.
"Oh, thanks."
Mabel stared, wondering what had gotten into him. Joe took the rake and string from her, leaving her with her hands in the air. Joe walked away from the circle and yanked the cat out of the bag. Feral and furious at the inconvenience, it screeched and clawed.
"Goddamn cat, you're lucky I don't break your full neck right now. Mabel, cut off enough string to go around this cat's neck."
Mabel stepped away from the circle, grabbed Joe's knife, and cut off the string he'd asked for.
"Now wrap it round its neck."
Faced with the reality of hurting an innocent animal, she was angry for the first time in years. She thought she had lost her capacity for fury a long time ago. Joe had enough ire for the both of them. She figured adding to it might cause them both to burst into flames. Despite the sick feeling in her stomach, she had to press on. She couldn't stop now.
"Hurry up, we ain't got all day, dammit,"
Joe said, sick of her being so slow all the time. That was enough to spur Mabel into action. Although she was still reluctant, she was determined not to show it. She wrapped the string around the cat's neck.
"Now make it a noose. I'm gonna use that rake and this string to make a leash."
Mabel did as she was told, anxious to get this done. Joe put the rake through one of the holes in the string and pulled up. Satisfied that the cat was properly snared, he dragged it toward the circle. The cat fought him and the string the whole way. Joe paused about 2 feet away from the circle and looked down at the beast. How long should he leave the cat in the circle? How many times could it go in and come back out alive? He decided that he had a lot of testing to do before he would know exactly how this circle operated, but he had to do it if he hoped to salvage anything from his cattle. He pushed the feral thing out to the very edge of the circle. The cat stopped his fruitless, frenzied attack on Joe to sniff at the circle. Just like Joe, the cat was now hypnotized by the strange patch of earth. Joe pushed the cat partially into the circle, hind legs out and front end inside. And nothing happened. The cat just continued to sniff around. Joe pushed the cat all the way into the circle. And still, nothing happened. Was it because he was attached to something outside of the circle? Just when he was about to pull the cat out, it went limp. He stared at it for a few seconds, searched for any signs of life, then pulled the cat to him. He was about to put his hand on the cat to feel for a heartbeat or rise and fall of its body, but the cat started to flop around like a fish out of water. Stunned, he backed away, but not before the cat scratched him across the face. Furious, he grabbed the cat by the neck and threw it, rake and all, into the circle. The cat landed on its feet and took off running, dragging the rake behind it. It didn't make it far before it went limp and fell on its side. Joe approached the circle with uncharacteristic caution. He slowly bent down, eyes trained on the cat, and grabbed the handle of the rake with the tips of his fingers, careful not to touch any part of the circle. Mabel watched him with apprehension. Joe kept working at the rake to pull it out, but it was heavy, and he couldn't get a good grip with just his fingertips. Mabel crept forward, hopeful that Joe's concentration was fixed on the retrieval of the rake, and that he wouldn't hear the grass crunch under her feet. She was just a foot away when he finally got the rake out far enough to grab the handle and haul the cat back out of the circle. He stood up so suddenly that Mabel just knew that he had realized what she was about to do, but he only looked annoyed that she was in his way, again. Joe sat down and watched the cat, anxious for it to spring back up as it did before. Mabel sat quietly a few feet away, mesmerized by the effect the circle had on him. Joe had never cared about anything but beer and football. Science wasn't even on his radar. He had certainly never been interested in any kind of clumsy scientific experiment, but the circle called to him and begged him to discover its secrets. Just as Mabel turned her attention to the cat, it sprung up again. Aha! Joe hopped to his feet too and clapped his hands together. He was giddy with delight at the cat's resurrection.
Do you think it was dead, Joe?
Joe had forgotten Mabel was even there. He turned to her and scowled. It weren't breathing. How's it gonna be alive if it ain't breathing? I swear, sometimes I wonder about you. Question you should be asking is how it died and then came back. This is like some pet cemetery shit right here. He remembered from the movie that when things came back, they didn't come back right, and turned back to the cat like it would eat his face off at any moment. The cat just sat there licking itself, oblivious to Joe and Mabel, and looking, for all the world, like a normal cat. But Mabel realized that the cat acted more like a normal domesticated cat, not the feral cat it was. Death seemed to have tamed it a bit. She wondered how long that might last. Would it stay like this forever? Would it return to its feral state after a while? What would happen if Joe died in that circle and came out? What would happen if he went in that circle and didn't come out at all? Mabel looked up at Joe as though she feared that he had somehow heard her last thought. He was still busy watching the cat, ignorant of her treacherous notions. Feeling vulnerable to be looking so far up at him, Mabel stood up. That got Joe's attention.
Help me with these cattle. We gotta get them out of here and see if they come back too. They don't, we gotta butcher them before they go bad.
Mabel looked at him, expectantly. Joe stared at her, exasperated with her lack of intelligence. He needed to make sure she knew he was the boss around here.
You're gonna go in there and put a rope around the cattle, and I'll drag them out with a tractor.
Mabel was horrified.
But Joe, that cat wasn't in there for 10 seconds before it went limp. I can't go in there. If I did, I wouldn't be able to move fast enough to get the rope around him.
Pointing out a flaw in his plan only made Joe angrier. Saving face, he said.
I swear, woman, you can't do nothing.
Mabel looked down to appease Joe, but the thought of him going into that circle was eclipsing her submissiveness. Blood rushed to her head. Her violent heartbeat drowned out the sound of her breathing. Joe yelled at her, but she couldn't be bothered to listen. All she could think of was Joe inside that circle. Either dead or docile. Didn't matter which. Long as he went in that circle.
I've got an idea.
Mabel's words and the urgency in her voice stunned Joe. She knew not to speak unless she was spoken to.
Well, out with it,
Joe said.
Well, you're stronger and faster. You had a good idea, but I'm too frail and slow to get him roped before the paralysis sets in. You can do it. And if you can't, I'll just pull you back out with the tractor and we'll come up with another idea.
Ego and instinct battled in Joe's mind. His instinct told him that being paralyzed or dead wasn't worth it. Nor was he the type to go along with someone else's idea, especially a woman's. Especially Mabel's. But she was right for once. He was superior. She could never do anything right. If he wanted to get those cattle out of that circle, he was going to have to take care of it himself, no matter what the idea was. And the idea really was his, just with the role swap to make more sense.
Well, what are you waiting for? Go get the rope and the tractor.
Why did he always have to hold her hand through every little thing? By the time Mabel finally came back with the tractor, Joe had convinced himself that he was the only one capable of rescuing his cattle, and Mabel had convinced herself that she was doing the right thing. After Joe tied the middle of the thick rope around himself and one end to the tractor's hitch, he made a noose with the other end to go around the neck of his cow. That done, he announced that he was ready.
Soon as I get that rope around that cow's neck, you get moving, you hear?
Yes, Joe, Mabel replied. Joe decided to do a little test before he walked headlong into that circle and put a fingertip just across the border. He felt no different, so he pushed his whole hand in. Now he was downright courageous. That circle wouldn't have an effect on him. His mama always told him he was special, and now he knew he was. But he wasn't stupid. He was still going to be quick about it. Before he lost his nerve, he rushed in toward the cow closest to the edge and wrapped the rope around its neck. He turned a whistle at Mabel to signal it was done, but she had her back turned to him.
Damn that woman, he thought.
He started to feel heavy, too heavy to stand up. It felt like he had lead in his legs and an anchor tied to his chest. Before he realized what was going on, he was face down in the dead earth. Mabel kept her eyes straight ahead, afraid to look at her husband and what might be happening to him. She just repeated Psalm 23 with special attention to, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil." Finally, she turned around. He was still. She stared at his back and looked for evidence of breath, but didn't see any. She hadn't really considered her plan carefully. Up until this moment, she focused on action, afraid that if she took time to think, she would talk herself out of it. Now she wondered how long she should leave him in the circle. What if he had to stay in longer than the cat because he was bigger? What about brain damage? That thought was enough for her to decide to pull him out. The last thing she wanted was to be saddled with more responsibility when it came to him. She inched the tractor forward, making sure the rope was still securely around both Joe and the cow, and that nothing was coming loose. Mabel let out a breath she hadn't even realized she was holding. Joe and the cow were finally out, but she stayed on the tractor and waited. She didn't want to be anywhere near him when he woke up. If he woke up. If he did wake up and he was the same, he would throw her in that circle permanently for what she'd tried to do. She looked over and saw the cat. It was stock still. Flies buzzed around it at a pace that mirrored her frantic heartbeat. Then she heard him groan. Well, he wasn't dead. Hopefully he wasn't brain dead.
Joe? Joe? Are you all right?
Joe fumbled to put his cap back on.
Did we get the cow out?
He had just died and he was worried about the cow. Maybe he didn't see her ignore him after all. Mabel inched forward, afraid to look into Joe's eyes. Yes, we did, Joe. Your plan worked.
Is the cow alive?
I'm not sure. I checked on you first.
Well, damn it, check to see if the cow's still alive.
The old Joe was back. Mabel walked over toward the cow and put her hand on its ribs. No telltale rise and fall. No life. It's not alive, Joe.
God damn it! All that work and the damn thing is still dead.
Mabel couldn't let him give up on this plan. She needed him to go back in that circle, so she walked back toward him. It might take a little longer for it to come back. It's been like that for hours. Just as she finished her sentence, Joe slung his hat to the ground. He looked at the cow with more fury than he had ever had for Mabel.
What is it, Joe?
It's rotting. Like it's been dead for days, not hours. Look at it. The goddamn cow is rotting. I can see it rotting.
Mabel looked over at the cow. It was decaying so fast it looked like it was on a time-lapse camera. The cow's corpse had ballooned. Vultures picked at its flesh, rewarded for their patience. She looked back at Joe and gasped. His skin sagged as fast as the cow decayed. Age spots peppered a quickly forming bald patch, and his hair faded from brown to solid gray. It had worked after all. Not quite the way she had wanted, but it worked. The circle was aging him. She realized the cat hadn't calmed down because the circle made it docile. It was because it made the cat old. The cows had been in the circle long enough to die. Things stayed frozen in the circle, but when they came out, it was like Mother Nature was on fast forward. A smug smile spread across Mabel's face. That old crone in town was right. Mabel did have magic in her blood. The hex bag she buried in the pasture while Joe slept wasn't perfect, but it did a fine job for a beginner's spell. Joe didn't look a day younger than 90. And now for Lake Tuesday. Tuesday is made of thorns and vines that will pull you underwater and bleed you dry. There are signs all around the lake warning folks to keep out, but the scattered bones behind the fence make them redundant. I don't think any living thing has set foot inside that fence in decades. Lake Tuesday and the surrounding town were deemed uninhabitable until a few decades ago. Supposedly, a nuclear power plant had an incident. No one knows for sure what happened, but it's generally agreed that it was an explosion that caused radiation to leak into the water, soil, and air. For a while, the Tyler Power Corporation paid hush money to the former residents, but after babies started to be born with defects, the citizens sued and settled for a multi-million dollar deal to rebuild the town once it was safe again. Those babies are now long dead, but the old folks remember their grandparents with their gnarled hands and missing limbs. They remind us often that we can't trust anyone who cares about money more than people. But we're young, far removed from that tragedy. Our parents were the first generation to return. Only 10 families came back and took advantage of the settlement. Our childhoods were full of warnings and frequent checkups at the doctor, but everything seemed fine, except for the boneyard at the lake. We decided that our parents were overly cautious. Our curiosity outweighed our fear. But that's not how we ended up at Lake Tuesday last night. Something called us there. We never talked about it. We all just showed up. None of us said a word as we arrived. Somehow, we all knew why we'd chosen that day, that moment, but we didn't dare say it aloud. To say the words would have made it crazy. We stood there, peering through the diamonds of the chain-link fence, looking for something, anything, moving in the lake. We came, but we still didn't know why we'd been called. Not until Greg began to climb. Even the thorns of the barbed wire fence at the top didn't keep him from completing his mission. His feet hit the ground on the other side, and we held our breath, waiting for something to happen. Would his eyes bleed? Double over in pain? Greg picked up a raccoon skull and gave us that signature smirk of his that promised shenanigans were about to begin. Soon, we were all climbing the fence, wires rattling and bones tinkling beneath our feet. We were so focused, we never saw the vines. But when Greg's boyfriend screamed, we all saw the vines wrapping around Greg's body. We grabbed the sharpest bones we could find to cut them away, but for every one we severed, five more seemed to appear. Only his head remained free. He shouted for us to leave him, but we barely even noticed he'd spoken with our grunts and slices and dedication to saving him. We didn't stop fighting, not even when we saw the thing ascend from the lake. A squid-like creature with thorned vines for tentacles. Greg was one of us. If you'd asked, we would have said we'd never stop trying to save him. But that would be a lie. The thing crept its way along the bank of the lake, its tentacles slithering in every direction like spiked serpents, but very clearly looking for Greg. That's when we stopped. We stood slack-jawed, unable to move. Greg couldn't see the thing behind him, but he could tell by our faces something was wrong. And the only thing he could do in that situation is the absolute last thing he should have done. He screamed. The vine tentacle struck so quickly, I don't think any of us realized what was happening until three of them made their way down his throat. Then it dragged him into Lake Tuesday, and the water went impossibly still. No one moved for what felt like forever, but it was really probably less than 2 seconds. It may have only been a moment, but it was enough time for the bones beneath our feet to form a grotesque army, and tendrils to tether us to the ground. The scattered bones formed human skulls with coyote bodies, raccoons with bird heads, and a centaur with a lower jaw of a wolf. The army of long-dead creatures surrounded us. Even if we hadn't been rooted to the ground, we couldn't have escaped. Then, the centaur wolf thing approached us. A voice in my head said,
"Who is the second?"
The others heard it too. They were at once looking down and away from the thing, and at everyone else. Tendrils retrieved Greg's body from the water and dropped it next to the centaur. The corpse was somehow desiccated like a mummy, yet covered in kelp and lake water. The centaur spoke in our heads again.
"If I must choose the second, I will take a third."
Chaos erupted. Kids started pushing each other. Some broke through their tendrils and tried to run, only to be snatched up by bigger vines just before reaching the fence. Then I heard,
"You choose."
The fighting and finger-pointing continued. I thought it had spoken only to me, but then I saw Greg's boyfriend standing perfectly still. He looked around, but didn't notice me looking at him. His eyes landed on Michaela. Michaela, the only one of us who was an outsider. Her parents moved to town to study the effects of radiation on us. Her whole family looked down their noses at us. Greg's boyfriend looked at the centaur and gave a subtle nod. Then he turned back to Michaela with equal parts excitement and disgust in his eyes. Vines began to circle around Michaela's head like vultures, but they did not take her. The bone army collapsed. Even the centaur became nothing more than mismatched bones. We tried to run away, but the vines kept pulling us back. The ones above Michaela were swooping close to her like they wanted to smell her to be sure she was good to eat. The voice in my head again.
"Do you object?"
No one else reacted. It was asking me. Then it spoke again.
5, 4, 3.
I wanted to say yes, to save her, but Michaela was truly the worst of us all. Greg was the best, she was the worst. She was the only real option. "No," I whispered. One by one, everyone got quiet and shook their heads. Michaela stood there, ignorant, as we all condemned her. No one cried. No one stopped it. No one objected.
"It is unanimous,"
the voice said, out loud this time, in a dull roar that made us duck and cover our heads. We never saw the vines drag Michaela to the lake. We only heard a split-second scream before it was swallowed by the water. Lake Tuesday is made of thorns and vines that will pull you under and bleed you dry. That's what the sign should say. Instead, it only says, "Keep out." Thanks again to our patrons for supporting this podcast. Because of your support, listeners around the world get creepy tales in their ears every other week. If you want new stories every week, the only way for that to happen is to join the Nightlight Legion by going to patreon.com/nightlightpod and supporting this podcast. You can also make a one-time donation via PayPal at paypal.me/nightlightpodcast. If you're unable to support us financially, word of mouth is the next best way to help. Give us a shout-out online on Twitter or Instagram at nightlightpod, or like us on Facebook at nightlightpod. Reviews are also a huge help, so be sure to leave a few kind words on your podcast platform of choice. Audio production for this episode by Tanya Ransom. Join us next time for a brand new story, and be sure to leave your nightlight on. You never know what might be waiting for you in the dark.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.